people who love them.
Hello, this is The Thing About Cars. Welcome back, and thank you for joining us. We are recording in Strongbox West in Atlanta, Georgia, as usual. Around the table, we've got
Ronnie,
Becca,
Ben,
and I'm Mickey. A very short agenda for us today. Something we've had on the board for a while here that I think we should try to talk about in generalities is Ben wrote up there 1947 Lincoln engine repair slash swap, and apparently a friend of yours had a question.
Yeah, well, friend of a friend, somebody I've not actually met personally, but this guy apparently has a 47 Lincoln, and he did not say what the problem is, but his question is, should he rebuild the engine or just swap something else into it?
1947 Lincoln.
Yeah.
Is the engine completely shot?
I don't know anything more about it than what I just told you.
So we have a lot of assumptions and a lot of guesses to make.
So we don't know if it's original or not.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Because I would think that would be a big point right there. If it's original and you want to keep the car original, you might want to start with what you've got, unless they want to make it all modern but look like a classic. Yeah.
What's your friend's name?
His name is Ron.
Ron. Okay. So first of all, Ron, you've got to give us some more information. And we invite you to do that. We can Skype you in or do something else to get some more information from you, or just write to us if you want. But I think it would be fun to do the Skype thing.
Definitely.
What do you think, Ronnie?
I mean, hypothetically speaking, we'll give this a couple of different conditions. Typically, when you're working with a car from 47, if it's not a barn find in the South or Midwest or Far West, it's probably pretty trash. The thing that you have to keep in mind is with any restoration, you're either going to be investing a lot of time or money or all three.
Labor of love.
Yeah. It's a huge commitment. If you are dedicated to the Lincoln brand, there's nothing wrong with trying to make it numbers matching original one, everything that it was back in 47 on the car. That's fine. It's probably going to be crap. Because everything from 47 is old and decrepit at this point. There's very few manufacturers that will make, you know, old parts new again. So your best shot is to resto-mod it. I would recommend looking at a 70-something Mustang crate engine if you want to keep it in the family of, you know, Lincoln Ford. And then, you know, there's a bunch of upholstery shops that you can work with to get some nice clean interior done. And then body work is probably going to be your biggest expense. Finding a good, reliable body shop that can make sure that those channels that would collect a lot of water and develop rust are eliminated or repaired or sealed off or something along those lines, that your car isn't built out of Bondo. That's a big issue with restoration pieces. A lot of people like to just use kitty hair and Bondo to build up surfaces to make it nice and even, but that doesn't give you very good longevity.
But if the issue is just his engine, let's assume more information from Ron, right? So if the issue is just the engine, if the rest of the car is mint or near mint,
and you don't care about whether it's modern or classic, then yes.
Do you need it to match? Do you need it to be the original equipment? Or should he just go ahead and upgrade the thing with the crate, Monty's saying?
Crate, just knee jerk, there's a lot of people that want to stick to what it was, just stay true to the car. But the thing that I had a light bulb go on. I don't know if everybody could hear me on mic when I did that. And I'm going to have to go back and find the name. I found a website accidentally while looking for something else. It's a classic car parts finder.
Oh.
And you just put in the car and it starts searching and it'll look in junkyards and everything.
Wow.
And I don't know if it'll go all the way back to 47. When I found it and played with it, I was testing out like classic Mustangs. So obviously I didn't go all the way back to 47, but it was a very interesting find. I know I bookmarked it somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I've just got to find that. And maybe people could use that. Maybe
well, also so. Depending on the vehicle, in terms of classic car, if we were to reference Mustangs, there's an entire store called Mustangs Unlimited that's dedicated to restoring Mustangs.
There are more. As far as restoration, there's even better. There's a poop ton of places you can go for classic Mustang restoration, but it's the ones that I know. It's the ones I tinker with. So when I'm testing a website, I was testing it with Mustang ears.
Sure.
Yeah, so it was just to fiddle with a website I accidentally found.
So Ron, sorry.
No, I was going to say, you know, if it's just the engine, God, the tolerances are so low on those engines back in the day. And I mean, they ran on hopes and dreams, and apparently there were a lot back in the 40s and 50s.
I thought you were going to say it ran on like 20 weight 50 or something.
It's a 47 engine, right? It's
right.
a post-war thing, which they didn't really care too much about much. I mean, let me rephrase that. You know, ecological carbon footprint,
yes,
stuff like that.
Yes.
None of that really mattered because it was the roaring times after the war. And so, yeah.
So it shouldn't take much to just get it going if that's all you're looking for. And a rebuild on it, honestly, you need a Craftsman 105-piece tool set because everything is going to be a standard 3/8, 9/16, half-inch.
Right.
You know, wrench or socket, and then it'll all come apart.
We're also sitting here talking like he's going to do the work himself. Like, what if he wants to just pay someone
else
to just do it?
We need to know his priorities.
Yeah. Right. I mean, if you're looking to find someone to build it,
right?
That's the other thing. That's where the money comes into play because any shop that I know of wouldn't touch something that old without having a premium of 50% of the estimate paid up front.
Right, right.
Because it's a bear to tackle.
Sure.
You know, especially if you want to deliver a good product, you're looking at a lot of time invested and a lot of time hunting parts down and doing research because...
Which lends more strength to the notion that maybe just swapping the engine with something modern is faster.
Yeah, that's my opinion.
Yeah. All right. So cool. Ron, give us a call. Give us the scoop. Tell us what's going on with that engine and let's talk some more about your car. And, you know, while you're at it, Ron, send us some pictures. So
cool.
Yeah.
Or let Ben sketch up a concept piece of your car should look like.
Good one.
Right on. Let's do a quick moment of trivia, shall we?
Sure. Yeah.
Today's Jalopy Joust moment of trivia. This question is, here we go. Before Tesla Motors introduced its luxurious electric Model S, there was the Tesla Roadster, which consisted of Tesla's electric drivetrain and car bodies supplied by another manufacturer. Who did this fledgling American manufacturer partner with? Was it Lotus? Was it Daewoo? Was it Shelby? Or was it Saleen?
Saleen? It's Steve Saleen. He hates it when you say Saleen.
Every video game I've ever played all
they
said
all say
Saleen.
Wrong. Saleen. I know.
So let's think about that for a minute. We'll come back and answer that question in a second. Becca, you wrote up there Porsche question mark on the board.
Oh, sorry. My brain was still thinking about the Tesla question over here.
Yeah.
Sorry. No. It was something that Ronnie had brought up on the last episode that made me think about it. And it's one of those strange things, and I won't turn it into a giant long story, but it all started with my very first Mustang. She had some strange little quirks, and it started as a joke that I would rub the dash and tell her what a good girl she was. And, you know, it started as a joke, but it was weird because things would work after that. And I actually have another convincing story, but I'll leave that aside. So a couple of weeks ago, I went and visited Eric at his shop, and they specialize purely in European cars. They don't touch anything else European. So there's this one Porsche that had been in and out for months, and they just couldn't get it to run right. And every time they would think, you know, and they'd get it out. So I'm up there visiting, and as I'm leaving, I tell him, here's what you need to do. And I went up to the Porsche, and I started rubbing her and telling her what a good car she was. You know, it's not your fault. Your owner needs to give you a new top. I know he'll get to it. He will. And I'm talking to her like she's just an injured child.
Mm-hmm.
They got the car fixed that day. I'm just saying. So if what made me think of it, if you're having difficulties with a car repair, I'm not kidding you. The weirdest stuff happens when I do this. Rub the car and talk to her.
You know, listeners may recall a couple episodes ago, we had Tay in here with his haunted car. Maybe you should try this with this car.
Well, remember, I kept saying I have some stories of my own.
Yeah.
But it even worked on a printer. It's so
Rebecca
strange.
Rebecca has the magic touch for that sort of thing, perhaps.
I don't know if it's just me. I'm recommending everybody give it a shot.
Yeah.
And
go out and be nice to your car and give a little pat on the head. And what else?
If it's me, then maybe I need a charge to go around and be the car whisperer.
Exactly. The car whisperer. Car whisperer. Yes.
Car whisperer. I just, I don't know. I don't know if it was me or what. Everybody should try this. But it is so bizarre how this happens in my life. Just go out, just pat the car.
Just be nice to the car, give a little friendly caress.
Yes, just rub her gently, tell her.
That works on me too, actually.
Oh, does it? Yeah. I was going to say it usually works on all women, but it works for Mickey
just
too.
Just give me a little pat on the head, a little gentle, you know.
I'll remember that.
Yeah.
Next time I want something, I'm like, Mickey.
So this is the next item on our agenda. We wrote up on the board tools, ? And the thing about this, and I wanted to wait to ask this specifically when Ronnie was at the table. And, you know, I suppose Andrew could help with this question too, but the original point was Craftsman versus Snap-on versus Matco versus Kobalt. Does it matter? Why does it matter? Why do people have preferences for one or the other tools?
I think it's personal experience. It's I know my biggest thing that I talk about isn't tools, but parts. I'll talk about throw out Holley, get an Edelbrock, but it's because I had that one massively bad experience. I know so many people that hate one and love another that it's hard for me to even say, all right, which is great if I'm trying to find a good company. So I don't know. Maybe is there really a source that says somebody is tested, they use better metal or
a lot of them come out of the same factories, actually.
Right. Yeah.
So there's really only so much of a difference. It's all just labeling and some of its gimmicks. There are differences between certain components. And as a mechanic of, I don't even know how many years now, I will say I do have a wide mishmash of manufacturers providing me with tools. All of my sockets are from Harbor Freight because they're cheap and I lose them.
And the coupon. Oh my God. I love their coupons.
Yeah. I mean, any mechanic, anyone that's a mechanic, whether it's DIY or professional, knows you have lost at least 30 10 millimeter sockets
it's
by now.
True.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter how many you buy, you will lose it.
Absolutely the truth.
It's ridiculous.
Yes.
No. But so that's why I get Harbor Freight sockets. But at the same time, they don't break. Like, I've had the same Harbor Freight socket set for 12 years now, and they're all doing great. And I abuse the heck out of them. I use them on impact guns. If a bolt is rounded, I'll hammer the snot out of a socket onto the bolt so that it grabs, and it's still fine. Like, the bolt is the one that loses, not my Harbor Freight socket.
Not the socket.
Wow.
And that is the question, though. It's like, why would I spend extra money on a Snap-on or a Matco if something from Sears is going to do the same trick?
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. I think it has to do with, one, if it's a career and you want to be considered a professional, people always want the professional tools, which you're really just paying premiums for nonsense. sometimes, you know, the name brand sockets do better and they have higher consistency. So
you said do. Sorry, that was my juvenile interruption.
So like, Snap-on sockets have very specific corners in their sockets so that they grab a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also the quality control issue with places like Craftsman and Harbor Freight, where I have come across, you know, 12 millimeters that were more like 11.5 millimeter sockets. You know what I mean?
That's frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah. But at the same time, sometimes that's for the better, because a Harbor Freight 18 millimeter would fit a certain lug nut from Ford that wouldn't fit a Snap-on 19 millimeter. You know what I mean? So there's ways to go in terms of experimentation. Plus, it's $15. You're not really losing anything.
Right.
In terms of regular work, though, I definitely use Snap-on ratchets because they have a rubberized grip that fits perfectly in my hand. Matco has something similar, but I prefer Snap-on's feel. And, you know, it's whatever technology they're experimenting with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Matco has a has a 0 degree viscous head, while Snap-on has a 92 tooth degree design. So when you try to ratchet back in order to make your ratchet turn, you have to move the ratchet maybe, I don't know, a centimeter or two to get your next click in.
Right.
Whereas on your standard Craftsman, you're moving the wrench a solid 3 or 4 inches before you can click it down to turn again.
A side note on that, if you're really particular to something, but you really want a rubber handle and it doesn't have one, two words. There's two products. Plasti-Dip.
Yeah.
Or if you want like finger grooves or something, Sugru.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
So don't write something off if it doesn't have that fabulous grip you want either. There's a way to get that grip for yourself.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, I work with plastic.
For other people.
Yeah, no, for sure. If you're a DIYer, that's definitely a way to go.
Oh, he wants to have the professional looking ones.
Yeah. The look kind of, it's just, I want to grab it and go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Only once did I ever pick up a set of tools and say they were actually gorgeous. The rest of the time it's like, okay, these will work.
Mm, right.
Yeah. Right.
So. Excellent. Let's wrap this episode just to, you know, with the answer to our trivia question for the day. The question was, before Tesla Motors introduced its luxurious electric Model S, there was the Tesla Roadster, which consisted of Tesla's electric drivetrain and car body supplied by another manufacturer. Who did Tesla partner with? Was it Lotus? Was it Daewoo, Shelby, or Saleen?
Oh, well, I definitely know the answer to this one.
You know the answer to this one?
Yeah, I know it too.
Then I think... Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Ronnie.
Oh, I know the answer.
I'm thinking it's Lotus.
Yeah. It is Lotus, so we all...
Absolutely.
I think we all is got
it,
that one.
I was going to ask, though, is it a Southern thing that I say Daewoo and not... Daewoo? How are you pronouncing it?
It is Daewoo.
Is it Daewoo? It's not Daewoo?
I think it's... do we have any Korean listeners? Call in and let us know.
I figured
how to pronounce that toilet company that decided to make cars for like 4 years.
I never know if it's my southernism that's causing me to pronounce something some way. Am I doing it wrong?
I don't know why I'm pronouncing it that way either. I have no pronunciation guide on the matter, but you know, Daewoo being the huge company that it is.
Right.
So yes, please someone correct the error of my pronunciation ways.
Well, it's kind of like Hyundai. There's so many pronunciations of it.
The only reason I think it's Hyundai is because like Hyun is like an older brother in Korean. Oh wait, did I say that right? Oh, if we have any Korean listeners, correct my ignorance. Korean speaking listeners, please correct my ignorance.
All right, cool. Thanks as always for listening to us, you guys. We really appreciate your comments and feedback on the show. You can always contact us at our website, thethingaboutcars.com, our Patreon, and we really value your support. Our Patreon is patreon.com/thethingaboutcars, and we do post a lot of frippery and nonsense on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/thethingaboutcars, obviously. But thank you again for listening to us. Thanks to our guests for coming out to play with us. And we will look forward to seeing you in about a week. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.